to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it, you gotta go hard, and just dig deeper inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive, just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in.
What's going on, everybody? Once again, I welcome back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, inspiration, dedication, and as always, just tapping into your higher self. And today we got a really, really dope special guest on the podcast. It's one of my dope brothers, man, that I know, man. He has had so much success in the music licensing space, man, just getting music placed in films, television, man, and his production is just serious, man. I mean, he's definitely one of those, man. I say top five that are alive in my book, but you know, we'll expand on that. But I like to welcome, man, my brother, man, Maxton Waller. What's up, man?
Oh, hey, man. Thank you so much. That's such a sweet thing to say, too. I've never been in anybody's top five for anything, so that's really nice.
Definitely, man. No, the production's serious, man. Production's dope, man. So,
thank you.
Yeah, man. Definitely, bro. And, you know, for people listening that might not be too familiar with you, like, you know, I think this will be super dope, too, for a lot of the listeners that we have, just to get more familiar with you. Things that you've accomplished, things that are coming, and you know, they could just kind of get more informed. So you know, sure. I think, like, to start it off, like, a lot of times, you know, people don't know, like, where you're going necessarily unless they know where you've been. So for people that are listening that aren't necessarily familiar with you, could you kind of just expand on that, like, talk about how you got into music, like your beginnings, things like that?
Yeah, man, definitely. So I'm, you know, primarily now, I'm, when people ask me what I do, I say I'm a composer, you know, because that's what my interest is, in narrative stuff. I've done a lot of music licensing. I've had, you know, some success in that, and that's been wonderful. But, you know, what I'm the target I'm aiming at is that I want to be a film composer. And, you know, I started out playing music at a really young age. I grew up, I'm from Florida, unfortunately, and I grew up in like the Tampa area, and we moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I started playing music probably when I was like, I would say six was the first time I ever started playing music, and I went to guitar lessons, and I was learning classical guitar, and I hated it. So I quit. Like, 2 years later, I was like, I'm out. I can't do this. And then we moved again, and I was having a really hard time. I was 10 years old, and I was having a really hard time in school, and I needed, you know, something, some kind of outlet outside of school, because I didn't have a lot of friends. I was getting bullied a lot. It was pretty tough. And I got an electric guitar for Christmas that year. And when I would get home from school. This is before iPads, by the way. So I would go and I'd print out tabs from the internet for like my favorite songs. And I remember one of the first ones that I learned on tabs was Song 2 by Blur. And I would spend my days just learning songs of it. So any artist I listened to as a kid, which was like, I was pretty punk rock, dude. For a 10-year-old, I was pretty punk rock. And I would go print out their tabs and I would learn their songs. So I really started falling in love with music around age 10. And that's about the same time, maybe a year or a year and a half later, I actually had my first show. I started performing. And it was at this pub. And it was like a basement pub in upstate New York. We were on vacation, and again, it was just songs that I had learned from this songbook that my friend gave me. And I went and I played all these songs and sang, you know, as an 11, 12 year old kid in this pub. And that was kind of, you know, I was like, oh, I really love this. This is what I want to do. You know, I was so nervous. I remember being so, so nervous, but I just had so much fun. You know, the release was so great. And then all through middle school and high school, I was kind of like the guy at the party with the guitar, you know. It was kind of what I was. I definitely wasn't, you know, obnoxious about it, but I was, I always had a guitar with me anywhere that I went. And I was in a band in high school, and I remember, you know, we would go every weekend. Our dads would drive us to this bar in St. Petersburg, Florida, which was 25 minutes away, and we'd play pretty much every weekend. We'd do like two hours of music, like an hour set, take a break, do another hour set. And because we're like 15, you know, 16 years old, like we'd have to leave the bar on our breaks. We couldn't hang out in the bar because, you know, we're not supposed to be in there. We're teenagers. And I just have always had this strong connection to performing. You know, it's just always been something that I love doing. And lately I haven't done it so much because I think I've identified more with the creative part of myself that enjoys being in my studio, enjoys working on music, you know, seeing, I know you can relate, you know, you have a track and you get to build it from the ground up and you get to see exactly from inception to like sending it out in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a crazy feeling, you know. It's like, it's kind of like performing times 100.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, so now, you know, fast forward, you know, I moved to LA when I was 17, and I was in bands for years. I toured, I did that whole thing, had a blast. And then in 2015, I got offered a job on a show. It was a Hulu series. It was a reality series called Rocket Jump the Show.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the first, it was kind of like Mythbusters for filmmaking. So the first part of the episode was, here's the documentary of the making of a short film. And then they would air the short film at the end of the episode. Pretty cool concept. Mm-hmm. And I did all the music for the documentary side of things.
Okay.
So that was like my first scoring gig. And I mean, I'm kind of skipping over a little bit of the music.
Nah, it's cool, bro. It's cool.
It's cool. I've had a winding path, so I'm going to try to keep it. Try to keep it together. But as you know, as creatives, we tend to get distracted.
Look, it's all good, brother. It's part of the process, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Let it go. We can freestyle. We're going off the top.
You know what? It's a blessing and a curse, isn't it? Because if I think that if I wasn't able to allow myself to get distracted sometimes, I wouldn't let myself come up with some of the ideas that, you know, I've come up with. And I think the fact that that it's been a winding path for me is so, I look at it now, you know, in the moment you're kind of upset because you're like, I need to find my thing. I need to have this one thing that's mine. And then as you get older and you kind of look back, you're like, well, wait a minute. I ended up here regardless of how, you know, confused or unsure I ever felt, you know? And I don't know, man. I mean, on some level, I like to think that everything's going to work out exactly as it should, you know? And so, yeah. So anyway, I mean, that was kind of how I got into film scoring. But before that, you know, like I said, I was in bands and stuff. And I had a buddy, who you know, Kenny Fleetwood, who was in another band that I was touring with. And Kenny and I are still friends to this day. And he was starting to do a lot of music licensing stuff. Like I remember he was the first one out of all of us to kind of like break out of the I need to be in a band thing and start producing his own music and getting music licensing. And this is 2012, I want to say. And he got one of his first ones that he got was just like, I mean, it was a big deal. And I remember looking at that and being like, wow, you know, he gets to make music and like somebody's going to actually pay him for it. That's pretty sweet. You know?
Yeah. Every musician wants that.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that also, you know, when you start to get into that stuff, it's always shocking how you can notice how much more your time can be valued if you're the one creating, you know, the actual material. If you're the one who's producing and recording and writing and doing all of that stuff, you know, which kind of goes into a whole other conversation about, you know, being, you know, running your own ship, right? But but yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much the gist of my story. And now here I am, and I'm, you know, continuing to work on, you know, the narrative composing stuff, and I'm continuing to do stuff for licensing. And I work with, you know, there's a company that does a lot of audio stuff for trailers that I work with out here in LA, and our mutual friend Chell and I, we do a lot of stuff that we're, you know, aiming at doing licensing stuff for, which isn't released yet, but we're both really excited about. So
Super dope, man. Super dope. And you know what's dope, Max? Like, I like to see the growth. So seeing how musicians can basically just they can go from this one space of, all right, you know, I'm just a musician, I'm making content and I'm going to tour, to actually being able to have that growth and transition into the world of licensing, because it opens up so many other doors of opportunity. I feel that like with music licensing, and we both can relate because we've had a lot of placements, it's like your content is able to basically go places that will take you further. You know, like if you know, I remember putting out music myself and I'm like, all right, you know, I got to hire a publicist to market and promote this. And then what I realized is that when you get a song placed on a major television show or movie, well, you don't have to worry about getting a publicist because they are your publicist, essentially. Yeah. You know, they have a budget. And it's like, because your content is kind of, you know, it's like hitching a ride. It's like, all right, you know, we all going, you know, we're taking advantage of this opportunity. So I feel like it's, you know, music licensing is definitely a way for artists to get their music heard on a bigger scale and actually having to do far less work. You know, it's a lot of work to you know, do an album, to try to market the album, try to package the album. And it's like you're doing everything yourself, you know? Yeah. So I think that's pretty dope, man.
Yeah, the marketing side of it is undeniable. You know, the song of mine that has the most streams on it that I've ever had is a song that got placed in something, but was actually written with a band that I was in back in the day, and then later got placed in something. And it's kind of like, so, you know, it's like, is this thing on? You listening, Max? You know?
Yeah, it's true. Like, you know, you never know what's going to be that one to go. I had a record that I did. I did this record after my mom passed. I want to say I did this in like 2013. I did this record and, you know, it was an underground record. I put it out on an album or whatever. And then years passed, and then the song actually got placed in 50 Cent show Power. And once that hit, literally, like, revenue had went up 135,000%. That was literal. Like, I looked at it in the green and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, because a song, you know, but this is the power of music licensing. It's like, you know, creating a whole new base that wasn't aware of your music. So it's definitely great for exposure, man. Like, you know, and I think that's the dope part about this podcast, is like having successful people like yourself on to kind of, you know, realign how artists view things. You know, it used to be, I need to get a record deal to be successful. And now that's not the case. You know, it's like,
thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you, dude. You know, I think too, it's interesting that you talk about, you know, this record that was obviously really special to you and ended up being very successful for you. I mean, maybe that's another thing to talk about too, which is something I feel very passionate about, which is that, I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on here, but I think,
of course, man, be free, brother. Be free.
All right. I can do that. people can smell bullshit from a mile away, I think. And I think that of all of the industries of art, I actually think there is a place for, you know, music that you don't have an emotional attachment to in licensing. And I also think that when you are attached to something and when you do put your all into it, I think people can tell. And I think that it will have, basically what I'm trying to say is I think you get back what you put out, you know? And, you know, you put out all the energy making this record, you know, following this like big event in your life, and then look at, you know, what eventually came of that, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
It's pretty beautiful.
It's true, bro. I agree with you, man. Yeah, like the passion, I think that goes a long way. Like you said, like people can feel it and they know when an artist isn't really pure and they're just going through the motions, or whether they're chasing a trend sonically. And it's like, all right, this is just what's popping for the moment, as opposed to someone who's intentful. I think, and a lot of successful musicians, I would like to say, like the most successful musicians have that, you know, when people, I remember when I first heard Eminem and I kept hearing, oh, you got to hear this white boy, he's a rapper. And I'm like, okay, you know, I didn't care about his race. Only thing I cared about is what he had to say. Right. And if it was authentic, you know, and I could feel it through his music. I could feel the passion. I never viewed him as like a culture vulture or he was appropriating black culture. I viewed him someone that basically he went through a struggle and he had a story to tell, you know. And, you know, struggle basically is like, you know, it's an emotion, it's a feeling. So, you know, I don't care if you're white, black, Asian, Pakistani, if you went through a struggle, I can relate to you, you know? So that goes back to what you were saying about feeling it being authentic, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, you can feel it. And I think that's what separates truly great musicians from mediocre musicians, you know? Like, we're able to translate our passion, our convictions, our pain into our music, you know?
Yeah, totally. So,
great point, totally. Man. Great point,
and
bro.
And it's our job. It's our job as artists to help people, to help other people translate that too. You know, there's a lot of, I think that the biggest gift you can give to somebody with your music is to make them feel understood.
That's powerful.
You know, I think that if you can help somebody understand or make space for their big feelings that they have with your art, then I think you've done your job.
Wow, Max. I agree with you, bro. You know, I agree with that 110%. And it's true. It's like, I had a line in one song. I was like, you know, I'm a voice to the voiceless. So there's people out there where it's like, they're not, you know, musicians like us. So they don't necessarily have the capacity to make a song that expresses what they feel. However, they can put on some of your stuff. They could put on my stuff, whoever, and they can get in tune with something that they connect with. And that's true. It's like, you know, like there's like a, I know there's some people, some musicians don't agree with this, but I do feel there is a almost like a social obligation to a certain extent, right? Because we have the voice. So if we're not using our voice to be impactful, then what are we doing? You know?
Man, amen. You know, it's funny you say that. You reminded me of this time. It was 2014, and I was in a bad spot in my life, and I was driving, not because of my job, because of personal stuff, but my job happened to be at the time that I was an Uber driver. And I remember I picked this guy up in Venice or something, and he starts talking about how we're just making small talk. You know, what do you do, man? He's like, oh, I developed a sports betting app, and I don't remember which one it was. He's like, and I just sold it to this company, you know, probably for like $1 billion or something crazy.
Crazy,
like
Jesus Christ.
You know,
that's casual conversation.
Yeah, I know, right? It's casual. Yeah. I'm like, why are you in my car right now? Dude? Like,
wait, why are you
the here? DJ? Come on, man. And he's like, what do you do? And I'm like, you're looking at it, dude. You know, at the time I was feeling kind of down on my art. You know, I had just come off of like a band breaking up. I was struggling to like figure out what was next for me creatively. And he's like, yeah, but outside of this, like, what, you know, what are you passionate about other stuff? And I'm like, yeah, I music, you know, I'm a lifelong musician, composer, songwriter, you know, I like to produce music. And he's like, oh man, thank you. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, thank you. He's like, I always thank artists when I meet them because, you know, artists are the ones who are responsible for moving the culture forward.
Mm.
And I was like, whoa, it was one of those things that's so obvious that you don't think about it. You know, it's so obvious looking at history, how art has moved the culture forward, you know, in every place that art has existed. But now, you know, feeling like you get to be part of, you know, just whatever this energetic movement is that continues to develop the culture. It's such an honor. Honestly, it's not, you know, making money licensing music is great, and that's a very practical thing, and you need money to survive, and that's amazing. You know, getting to create something you love and then making money on it, well, that's pretty badass. I mean, that's an amazing feeling.
It's true. I agree with you, man. Yeah. And I think, you know, because this podcast, we always talk about music, but then we incorporate life, and we talk about, like, you know, people's desire to win. And looks like you turned into a lemon a second.
My camera's being wild right now.
Sorry, yellow. Yeah. But like, just, you know, talking about, like, passion and drive and purpose, and that's where people truly feel fulfilled. It's like, mm-hmm. where you know that you're walking in your purpose, and like you said, to your point, when you're able to be compensated for that, that's the win-win. You know, it's like walking in your truth and just being able to encompass that, like, that's super dope. So
I love that, walking in your truth.
Man, you know, musically. And I think a lot of times some artists might struggle with that, for the simple fact, like you said, it's like the phrase or the term that they've coined throughout history, the struggling artist, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like striking a balance between being true to yourself and then being able to be compensated for that. And then you get a lot of artists where it's like, you know, they just make music for the sake of trying to make a dollar, but it's empty. It's no soul behind it. You know, it's not fulfilling. So it's like, what's the point? You know, like, it's, you know.
Yeah. What's the point? And I don't know. What do you think? Do you think, I mean, I guess a thing I would add to that is, when it does get difficult, you know, are you going to stick it out because you really care about it?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you're doing something you're passionate about and it gets difficult, which, you know, here's a news alert for no one in the world, because everyone knows this, life is hard.
Yes.
So when it gets hard, will you continue to do it because you love it? Or, you know, just because you were like, well, it was convenient and I could work from home in my pajamas and I wanted to make some money, but it was too difficult, so I'm going to quit.
Yeah. And you know what? It goes to, well, one of the mantras that I have personally is persistence wears down resistance. So no matter what the obstacle is in life, you have to remain persistent. It's like you playing basketball, you in the game, right? If you hang around the basket long enough, you're going to get a rebound eventually, but you got to stay in the game. That's the thing. It's like, you know, if you just say, man, you know what? Fuck it. I ain't playing no more. You definitely going to lose. So I think, you know, being persistent and just having that diligence to say, all right, this is what I'm passionate about. This makes me happy. This will eventually work. Right. It's just, I just have to stay the course. And, you know, in life, you really just have two options. It's either you're going to proceed and try to actually conquer what's that thing that you know, it's just so elusive, or you're just going to fold, you know. And we do know that when you fold and you choose not to do it, you're going to be miserable anyway. So why not keep trying and chisel away at it? You know, like, that's
I totally hear you. I totally hear you. Like it's scary. It's scary to wake up every day and, you know, be out on your own, like, try to be doing this maverick thing. There's a fear element to that. But you know what is way scarier? being like old and decrepit, you know, sitting in my house wishing I had done it. That's way scarier to me.
Yeah, it's true, man. It's true. Like, you know, I feel so alive and feel good, like, when I'm walking in purpose, you know? And when you're walking in purpose and you're happy and you're fulfilled, that's awesome, man. You know, there's another saying, they say, you know, don't die before you die. So, you know, don't, you know, it's like a lot of people aren't necessarily in the graveyard, but they're dead. You know, it's like they're living a life that's unfulfilling. So it's like, you know, staying focused, staying true to yourself, your convictions, what makes you happy, and staying the course with that, you know. So it's super, super true, man. Super true. Yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, Max, because it was a couple of things that stood out to me, but You've been in the industry space for a long time. I know you told me about as far as the musicianship with your band and stuff like that, and then transitioning. I know that there had to be like obstacles, and you did mention like you were in a pretty dark space at one point in time. What would you say was the most challenging time for you? Because we know like with musicians, it can be trying, you know, because it's like we're trying to make it. And sometimes it seems like things are just falling apart and nothing is hitting. So what's a challenging time that you can pinpoint in your life regarding music and how you were able to overcome that?
Man, I would say that like the challenging times, any time that has been a challenging time for me has always been because of the fact that our personal lives are so intertwined with being an artist. And, you know, I'm somebody who struggles with anxiety. You know, I'm somebody who can doubt themselves pretty easily depending on, you know, what the circumstances are. You know, it's to me, those aren't things that ever will go away, but they are things that you learn to manage in life, you know. And now, I guess what I would say is like the obstacles for me personally are all relative to opening doors for myself and, you know, believing that I could actually make it work, you know, and doing that while also managing working with difficult people and trying to be creative. I mean, that has always been a challenge. And I think that what I've learned to do, it's funny, you kind of already said this, but what I've learned to do is just to be present. And I've learned that if I can, you know, if I can be totally in the moment, totally present, it kind of doesn't matter what happened before, what's happening in the future. Like, here's a good example. I had, and this will dovetail into something else I think is important to talk about, which is building relationships. But I had an opportunity this summer via a friend to work on a different friend's passion project. It was a book. This person wrote a book and then wanted to create an audiobook version of it to help pitch it. You know, I was like, wow, I've never done anything like that. You know, that's so wild. But I did it. And I became close with this person. And in the process of becoming close with this person, well, he tells me, oh, well, I have this new show that I'm creating on like a big streaming network that is a household name for us. And I want you to pitch on it. I want you to pitch to be the composer on it. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. It went from being, you know, I'm going to help this person out with their passion project to, wow, I just made a friend for life, I feel like, and I get to pitch on this show. And, you know, maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, I would send in the pitch and I would be an anxious mess because I'd be worried about, am I going to get it? What if I don't get it? Am I good enough? All that stuff. And when I say being present has changed all of that, what I mean is that, you know, 3 weeks ago, I sent in that pitch, and I immediately turned to my fiance Devin. I was like, we need to go out and celebrate the fact that I just got to pitch on this. You know, being in the moment, celebrating every moment that you can, because that's a win, dude. Like, that would be, if I got that gig, that would be the biggest gig I've ever done. But it would also, it's just a symbol to me of like, oh, wow, here's another door that was open for me because I stayed the course, you know?
Man, no lies, man.
And I guess, you know, as far as hard times go, you know, anything that's difficult, any period of my life that's difficult is always sort of pertaining to like, how am I looking at this time? What am I learning from this, right? Or what am I not learning from it, you know? And I've found that the hardest times, the obstacles have always, for me, luckily, have always been very mental. They've always been in my head, you know? I've always created more obstacles for things than were actually there, as I think is sort of human nature for a lot of people to do. Not everyone, but for a lot of people that can be the case. And yeah, I feel super lucky to have figured that out now. And you know, it doesn't make it easy. It doesn't mean that I'm not upset or that I don't get upset when things don't go my way or whatever. It just means that it's so much easier to move past those things. You know, allow myself to have my feelings about it, allow myself to be in the moment and sit with it, make space for it. And then, oh, okay, well, I'm done with that. What's next?
Super dope, man. And, you know, I kind of, as you were talking, I couldn't help but think about emotional intelligence and how that's important. And a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of times it's like being able to self-assess and assess, why do I feel the way that I'm feeling? And moving forward, what can I do? What kind of adjustments can I make to rectify this? And to your point, like a lot of times it's like overthinking, you know, feeling let down, uncertainty. These are all commonalities that musicians encounter. And it's like, you know, then needless to say, it's like, you know, the competitive element, like, you know, trying to compete in a overcrowded landscape. So definitely, yeah, being in tune with self and being able to constantly just check ourselves, you know, I have to do the same thing a lot of times. It's like, all right, just chill out, you know, like I'm doing too much. Simmer down, simmer down. right.
Dude, that's why I think it's so cool. Everything you're doing with the seminar, with the podcast, like that. I really admire the shit out of you for doing all this stuff, because I think what you're doing is you're giving people permission to feel that way. In a way,
appreciate it, bro. Yeah,
it's so much harder to be overthinking something and at the same time be thinking that you're wrong for doing that. You know, and here you are, I feel like you're helping to guide people towards realizing like, no, everybody does this.
Yeah.
Every person in the world feels this way at times.
Yeah. And
here are some very practical steps you can take, you
know? Yeah, of course, man.
I admire that.
I appreciate it, bro. You know, and I say, you know, a lot of times I tell people across the board, like, you know, it's very important not to let social media discourage you, because not everybody's posting their losses. So when people go to social media, it looks like everybody's winning every day. You know, it's like, oh, this person just did this. This person just did that. Oh, she's so beautiful. Oh, he's so successful. But not everybody's posting their losses. You know, it's like, you know, social media is a gift and a curse, because it plays on people's insecurities. So, you know, if you don't have mental fortitude to run your race and have that realist approach to say, all right, you know, good for that person, you know, but everybody's going through something, you know, and everybody's still trying to make it. So just realizing not to let social media make you feel away. And I think that's the battle that a lot of people have, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think there's plenty of work, you know, to go around.
And I think
that it's easy to feel competitive, you know. It's easy to be upset that somebody else got a sink or a job or whatever that you wanted. It's so easy to go there in your head, you know, and I think that that's habitual.
We
like have have made it so much easier on ourselves to be upset about those things than we have to. Then we have to think critically about it and be like, well, okay, it's not like that was the last job that's ever going to happen. So, you know, good for them, you know?
Yeah.
And to genuinely mean it.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole other thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the comparison thing is a killer. It's
comparison is the thief of joy.
Yep.
You know, always constantly comparing yourself to other people. So yeah, just, you know, running your race. For all the artists that are listening, and even if you're not an artist, just listening to this podcast, just run your race.
Yeah.
And be content with that. You know,
whatever
I think that that's,
yeah,
whatever that might look like for you, you know, that's important, man. Another thing, Max, that I wanted to say to you, man, it's a couple dope points, man, I had, man. I'm like, you know, it makes it hard when I'm interviewing my peoples, you know, because I got some good stuff to ask. You know, but I would say, man, so you've had a lot of success, man. Like, you've had a lot of success and you continue to have success. Out of all the things that you've accomplished, what is one of, let's say, what's a placement that you've got, like a sync that you were just super proud of, man, that you were like, yo, man, this is awesome.
I think something I was really creatively proud of was the one I was talking about. That was the song that ended up getting all the Spotify attention. And it was, it was the same company that made the Hulu show I was talking about.
Okay.
They actually had another show that you've maybe heard of called Video Game High School. And it's now it's on Netflix, but it started out as like one of the early, you know, YouTube scripted series things before YouTube originals existed and stuff like that. It was just people who were, you know, made videos on YouTube and they eventually amassed these huge audiences. So these guys made a show and it was, it's called Video Game High School. And there was a scene in it where one of the characters goes to prison and he's like in the prison yard with all of these really hardcore looking dudes. And, the song that was placed in that scene was a song I wrote for a band I was in called Handsomest Sin. The song's called Tell Me How You Died, and it's like a blues rock, pretty aggressive blues rock band from like 10 years ago that I was in. And it just fits so well in that scene, and it just felt so good because it was so loud. As you know, one of the things that can be kind of frustrating is like you get a song placed in a show and it can be kind of quiet and you're like, ah, man, I really wanted it to be louder so I could like share it with people. And you know, then you share it with, you know, like I share it with mom and she's like, oh, I can't hear it, you know, and I'm like, oh, I can't help you there, you know. But this was super in the forefront, and it was just a really uplifting moment. And people loved it, and people went and put it on playlists in their Spotify, and you know, it got a ton of streams.
I think it's, wow.
I mean, for me, not for some people, but for me, it was a ton of streams. I think it's like a million something now.
Wow.
And another one that I think about was, maybe you actually, do you know Anna San Juan? She's friends with Chell, so I thought maybe you would know her.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar, but I don't know her.
Dude, Anna's awesome. She's crazy talented singer-songwriter. She also is like a music supervisor on a lot of really cool projects. But she was a music supervisor for this commercial for like a home security company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the big home security companies. And she hit me up and was like, hey, they licensed the master rights for Dream by the Everly Brothers.
Okay.
And they wanted another rendition of it. And so they basically hired me to produce a rendition of the Everly Brothers Dream. And it ended up going like the commercial went on YouTube. And I guess so many people were asking about the song that the company decided to make a whole separate YouTube video just for the song. And I mean, it's in the millions of like people who have listened to it. And that felt really good. you know, because obviously you have the song itself, you know, is recognizable. Everybody loves that song, you know, but it felt good because I was like, that was my take on it.
Right, you know, of course.
People seem to be responding to it. And so I would say the moments that I'm really proud of are mostly revolving around, you know, when I can see the impact that it's having on other people.
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know? That's super dope, man. And it's true. It's like having impact, you know, because like they always say, there's a difference, you know, there's intent and then versus impact. So, you know, a lot of times musicians' intentions can be pure and in the right place, but, you know, the impact, it might be like, you know, nothing happened, you know, so to actually, you know, got like five streams and that's your grandma, your auntie, your uncle, and then you played it twice. He's like, what's going on here? You know? So, you know, that impact, man, that's dope when you can see it, because it's like, wow, like when it's true to you, like people get it, you know, and that's just like affirmation, confirmation, like, wow, you know, it hit its target, you know what I mean? So that's super dope, man.
Yeah, that's right.
Super dope, that's right. Man. That's so right. So another thing I wanted to ask you to, as far as, because you got a lot of drive, Max, you know, you got a lot of motivation, thanks, you know, man. And I mean, you know, to be persistent in this industry, you have to be that way. So, you know, for me personally, like my mantra, like I said before, is persistence wears down resistance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no matter what happens, like you still got to stay focused and, you know, just stick to the script. So my question to you is, what is a mantra that you live your life by? Like, what is your code that, you know, keeps you on point when even the times that you feel like, you know, you might be getting a little off track, what kind of tugs you back in the right direction, would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. What has been helping me lately, and by lately I mean, you know, the last couple of years, has been thinking of, you know, it's not necessarily something I say or repeat to myself, but it's more a thought that I have or a feeling that I have, which is that I try to think about being successful, you know, and when I, what I view as when I will be successful, right? And then I kind of try to put it into perspective, because something I heard somebody say once was that, you know, success is not this place that you arrive at. Success isn't a number in your bank account. It's not a number of streams. It's not a show that you got a song into. Those are things that contribute to you being successful, but that's not what success is. Success is how you behave every minute of every day. So kind of being able to, you know, look, we all need downtime, right? But if I'm, you know, if I'm doing things that are not conducive to my career, and, you know, I'm overdoing them, I'm taking too much time to do them, it's helpful for me to look at it and say, okay, what would a successful person or somebody I admire be doing right now? And I've been trying to live more by that, and it's helped a lot. It's helped a lot because it sort of takes the decision making out of it.
Yeah, of course, of course.
You know,
of course.
It's hard to decide. If your choices are, okay, I'm gonna go play PS5 for 12 hours today, right? Or I'm gonna like get these emails out, mm-hmm. right? Like, what sounds more fun? I mean, I don't even think we need to answer which one sounds more fun, but if I say, well, you know, what would insert composer who I admire here do, you know, the answer is pretty obvious, mm-hmm. right? So it comes down to decision making. You know, you don't have to do anything wrong if you take time for yourself. Everybody, like I said, everybody needs downtime. You have to do that. But you also have to get things done, and you also have to be proactive about them, because if you intend to go into an industry like film or like music licensing, nobody's going to, I mean, unless Well, no, even if you have representation, or even if you're, you know, part of the unions, like, those people still have to be very proactive about, what's my next job? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the next step for me? How do I get to where I want to go? Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking about it like, well, if I play Far Cry right now, I'm not going to be successful in 5 years. I like to think about it like, if I play Far Cry from now until the end of the day, I'm not going to feel successful at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a feeling. It's not this thing you can measure. Right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I guess that's, I mean, I hope that's not too convoluted.
Nah, not at all, bro. And you know what's crazy? I was having this conversation with someone 2 days ago, and it ties into that because we're talking about, what does success look like? And, you know, success equates to happiness and feeling fulfilled. So yeah, you can have, a lot of times we turn on the TV and we say, quote unquote, successful people that are multimillionaires, and they kill themselves, or they're checking themselves into rehab for substance abuse. And people look at that and say, oh my God, they have everything. What can be the problem? You know, you're a multimillionaire. Why are you doing drugs? You know, why are you an alcoholic? Why are you always in a depressive state? And then you can have a guy who is a janitor at a public school, and he can be the happiest guy on the planet, right? Not a multimillionaire, but he's just content. So I think success equates to happiness and feeling in the place where you're content, you know? And like you said, it doesn't equate necessarily to a monetary amount in a bank account, right? Because money doesn't equate to happiness. Of course, it's a tool that you need, that you leverage to pay your bills, to sustain a certain quality of life for yourself. But money doesn't always equate to happiness, you know? So happiness is a state of being, feeling fulfilled, you know?
That's right, man. That's right. And, you know, I think even I struggle sometimes to find the line between, you know, the right kind of pressure to put on myself, you know? I think there's certain areas where you can use either yourself or somebody else to light a little fire under your ass. And that can be very helpful in terms of just getting things done. But I also think that there are times when we're putting too much pressure on ourselves to try to either interpret what's going to happen in the future, or try to predict how we're going to feel in the future. That's a big one, right? If I, you know, going back to this pitch that I just did, if I don't get this job, I can sit here and I can try to predict exactly how I'm going to feel if I don't get the job. Guess what? I have no idea how I'm going to feel. I have no idea how I'm going to feel, because that's not something you can predict. I just don't believe that our brains can do that, you know? So rather than assume that, you know, because if I do that, if I go forward into my day and I'm trying to predict how I'm going to feel about stuff, my brain is not logically separating what I'm thinking is going to happen from what actually happened. And guess what? I end up with all of the feelings of disappointment, because all I've been thinking about all day is being disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal. That's natural to feel that way. I mean, you should, if you are never upset, there's something wrong with you, you know?
Yeah, that's not normal. It's not normal.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, to your point, you know, you have everything. How could you, you look at people who, like you said, people who seem to have everything and seem to also have all these problems. It's like, guess what? It's because they have everything. They also have humanity. Mm-hmm. They're also humans. They mm-hmm. have all the same feelings we have. They have all the same problems we have, just in different forms.
Different forms. You know? Yeah.
And I think that it's so easy to get ourselves into a state trying to control the future.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think as much of that control as we're able to give up and just focus on the work, and like you said, focus on being fulfilled.
Uh-huh.
I mean, truthfully, I think that's how you get to be successful.
That's key. And that's paramount.
But you know what? I want to follow that up by saying I still have a lot of work I want to do. I still have so many things I want to achieve. So I don't even know if that's right. I don't even know. I'm not going to claim to know what I don't know, but I'm going to tell you from everything that I've learned that that's my experience so far.
Mm-hmm. No, very true.
That's how I feel right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm happy to be wrong about that. But
yeah, definitely.
For right now, until something else changes my mind, you know.
Yeah, that's super dope, man. Like, you know, yeah, just being content, you know, and making dope music in the process, man. Like, yo, that's a super dope spot to be in. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Of course, man. You can't beat it, bro. Can't beat it, man.
Contentment. That's where it's at.
Contentment, man. Yep. Something else, let's see, man. Oh, well, you know what? Here's a question I have for you, bro.
Yeah,
and it's
sure.
A thought triggered. So we have so many musicians that listen to this podcast, and entrepreneurs, business-minded people. As far as the world of sync, do you feel, because I noticed like a trend recently. I saw a couple of things. I saw that there was a company that emerged that was charging $199, right? So people could pay $199. Doesn't matter if it's a big production movie company, or if it's just a person that's a YouTuber. Anybody can pay $199 for the year, and they can use the artist's music in their catalog for whatever purpose they want. So if a person, let's say, is, you know, they want to make a video of their dog eating a cupcake on YouTube, they pay $199 and they can use that. But if a movie has a budget for $20 million and they pay that $199, they can still use that same music for that purpose. So my question to you is, given the landscape of music, like, how do you feel about things like that? Especially for musicians, because there's a lot of talk amongst musicians about the devalue of music and, you know, what is music actually worth and what is a price point that is fear for artists, you know, and is what's happening. Obviously, the people that use the music, they benefit from that price point, but it hurts the musicians, you know. So what are your thoughts on that? And I guess, you know, the follow-up question would be like, you know, as a musician, what do you feel is the best approach that musicians should do?
Well, my first thought is that I can't. Sorry, my dog's going crazy right now.
It's all good. What's your dog's name, man?
She's Miley.
Miley. Miley, like, come on, man. Let's wrap this up, man. We gotta record some songs, man.
There she is. She wants to come say hi.
Hey, what's up, Miley? What's going on?
Big puppy dog eyes. You know, I can't speak to the numbers because everybody's lifestyle is different. And I think everybody can look at what is a fair price, like you said, differently. What I think about stuff like that is, you mentioned, you know, whether it's a movie with a $20 million budget or it's somebody making a YouTube video. Well, I think that, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, there are bigger budgets for movies than $20 million. So let's say that that's, you know, obviously not a small budget, but it's not the biggest budget that there ever was.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people who are making projects of that caliber are actually probably less likely to use something like that. And I think the reason why is because if you have gotten to the point where somebody's giving you access to that kind of budget to make something, then you are definitely creative enough of a person that you have ideas in your head already about exactly what it should look like, exactly what it should sound like. And therefore, why wouldn't you just go out and get everything custom?
Mm-hmm.
And so, truth be told, I tend to not really think about stuff like that much, because I don't see it. I see it as there's room for all that kind of stuff. And I think as far as licensing goes, if we're talking about people who are trying to make licensing, you know, a side hustle, or we're trying to, or people who are trying to make it into a, you know, other, like, to, just to diversify their income somehow. I think things like that are great for those people, because you sort of, you're not going to make as much money as you would, you know, cutting out on your own and trying to pitch on things, but you don't have to do as much work, you know? It probably doesn't require as much of your time. Not at all speaking to the quality of the work. It still has to be great. I'm sure everything that's on there is still great, but, you know, I think it sort of feels like a different lane to me, I guess, is what I'm saying. It doesn't feel like the lane that you or I are in. It feels like, it feels like it's its own thing, you know? Yeah. I mean, and at that point, it would be a preference, you know. Maybe the production doesn't have a lot of money for music because they spent all their money on talent. You know, they wanted to hire famous actors. So, okay, great. They asked for a ton of money. Now we don't have a lot of money left. We have to figure it out. Well, then in that case, I think that's great. But also, there will be people who are composers or who are artists who are trying to just get the credit or try to get the title. And if their values align with that project, or if they, you know, have a relationship with the person, maybe, then maybe they still get
I think I kind of lost you, Max. I think your reception's like getting choppy.
Sorry about that. Let's
see.
Can you hear me?
It's getting a little bit better. Yeah, it was kind of like choppy, like robotish. There you go.
Hey, sorry about that. My internet's being crazy right now.
Nah, you cool, man. Yeah, it's all good. Robbie's going to edit it out anyway, so don't worry about it. Cool. Yeah.
That's cool. Thanks, Robbie.
You the man, Robert.
Yeah, Robert. Thank you. So I think what I'm trying to say is I think there's a place for stuff like that. And I think that that's not really my competition, and that's not really your competition. And that's okay. And even if it was, that's also okay. You know,
right.
It doesn't freak me out because I don't view that as devaluing. I don't view that as devaluing my music. I view that as, creating, opening a door for somebody who wants to get into music licensing. You know, there's a lower barrier to entry with stuff like that. You know, if you're trying to sign a publishing deal with somebody like one of the big publishing companies, there's a higher barrier to entry. You have to have a track record. You have to have the songs to back it up. You have to own your own catalog. You have to yada, yada, yada. There's all these steps, right? With that kind of thing, they're like, yeah, we'll give you X dollars and you make us Y number of songs and, you know, that's it. So I think that that's actually great for some people. You know, yeah, I don't see it as a negative really at all.
Right. You know, one thing I thought about too is like, you know, everybody is responsible for setting their own price point, right? So, you know, you've got McDonald's, and some people love the dollar menu, right? you're going to go and you're going to ball out. You're going to take $20 and you're going to eat like a king. Then you got some people said, absolutely not. I want Peter Lucas, right? I want Ruth Chris. So, you know, you pretty much, you set your price point and you don't deviate from that. So I think, you know, a lot of times for musicians is, you know, it's not one size fits all. You know, everybody does what's best for them. And then you just take it from there. You know what I mean? So, you know, and like you said, to your point, when people want quality, they know where to get it. So there's always going to be those people that they seek out what they need. So I agree with you. I agree with you, man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's exactly right.
So I got two more questions for you, Max.
I'm here all afternoon if you want.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. So two more questions. So there's one question I have. It's called a Back to the Future question. So it's kind of like Marty with the DeLorean, right? Going back in time. Right. Classic, right? Classic, man.
I just watched that, by the way. I just watched that like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks
really?
Ago.
Yo, my favorite one was when they came out with Back to the Future 2, where they had the hoverboards and all this spacey stuff. It was crazy, man. I love that.
So, dude, that was such an epic moment from my childhood. Like,
man. It was super dope, man. Super dope. So if you could go back in time and just talk, have a conversation with your younger self, what would be something impactful? If you could only choose one thing to say, what would be something impactful that you would tell your younger self that you wish you knew then?
I would, I'd go back and I would beg young Max to meditate. That's what I would do.
That's powerful.
I'd be like, you need to meditate every day. Cause that has changed my life. You know, it's one of those things that I wish I had just started doing it sooner.
Mm.
You know, I was never skeptical of it. That wasn't why. I just didn't. Well, I guess I was. I didn't know if it would actually work, you know. Spoiler alert, it works. And I think that's the first thing, because I think that addresses a lot of the, like I was saying, the mental barriers that I would sort of set in my own way. You know, I would feel less anxious, so therefore I wouldn't be worried so much about the future. And I wouldn't be so worried about, you know, I would just be able to focus on myself and my goals. That would be ideal. If I could go back to talk to a younger Max, I would try to make it so that he would just focus on himself and his goals. And I think meditation is a huge, huge part of that for me right now, especially.
That's super dope, man. Super dope. How often, you know, that's a great thing, man. Like how long and how often do you meditate? Like, you know, is it a certain duration that you do in a certain amount of time in certain days? Like,
Yeah. It's, I do it for 10 minutes. I try to do it every day.
Okay.
You know, in my best times, I'm doing it 7 days a week.
Wow.
And that is, it's the first thing I do, right? So I wake up, I go sit in the other room, and I meditate. And something that was explained to me was that, you know, like it's different for everybody, right? The experience of it is different. So to start with, 10 minutes might be too long. I mean, I know for me, when I started, it probably would have been, I could probably sit for like 5 minutes. And it doesn't matter which app you use. It really doesn't. They all kind of do the same thing. But if you are able to just be there with yourself for any period of time, what happens is you kind of get out of, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like you stop being, it's like you start to sit next to your feelings instead of like sitting in them. You know, you start to, you're not so, your feelings don't control you or your, no, I shouldn't say that. What I should say is that they don't control your day so much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your feelings kind of, they're there. You still feel them, but you observe them, right? You're like, oh, that's funny. I just felt like this. That's interesting. You're more curious. That's what it is. You have this curiosity sort of about life. You know, you start to observe the things. And truthfully, I mean, there's still things that happen to me, and I'll notice what I'm doing or how I'm interacting with my world. And I'll just start laughing because I'm like, this is ridiculous. What are you doing? You know? And that is a product of meditation, right? But the key is, the key thing is stick with it. Just stick with it. You know, if it's something you're into, continue to do it, make it a regular thing. And you'll know when you've made progress because, you know, pretty much all meditation like apps for beginner level stuff, most of them start with focusing on the breath or counting your in and out breaths. Because it's a way of like grounding yourself in your body. And you'll notice you're making progress when you trail off in thought, you're somewhere else entirely, and then you're like, oh shit, I gotta get back to the breath. And there's no judgment, right? You're not like, you idiot, you got distracted again, you know? That's how you know, I think, when you have started to make progress with it. So that could be, for some people, that could be a month. For some people, that could be 6 months. It could be a year. The important thing is to try to make it a practice, you know? I don't think that it's like, going in and, you know, getting, like, let's say you blew a gasket in your car or something, you know? It's not the same as going and replacing it. It's more like maintenance work. It's more like an oil change. Mm-hmm. Like something you have to do regularly to sort of keep yourself in shape.
That's powerful, man. And I think that's dope too, because it's like, I always talk about the trilogy. So mind, body, and soul, right? So nothing can be out of sync, because as we navigate life, like, we got to make sure that we always maintain all three. Like, you know, if you're working out in the gym, but you're not taking care of your mental and your emotional and your spiritual state, sure, your outside physique will look amazing, but inside you're just decompensating. So everything's important. And taking that time, you know, for that, like meditation, I think that that's very important, you know, like even just from the spiritual side of it, to rebalance yourself. You know, we navigate through our days and we encounter all types of people, especially as musicians. Like, there's a lot of great people in this industry, and there's a lot of dark, jaded, malicious, backstabbing, low down dirty. Right? Like, we all got hard stories, man. Yeah, man. Right? So yeah. Mm-hmm. It's important to have that meditation and that spiritual enlightenment to be able to, I mean, for lack of better words, just realign your spirit, right? Realign your mental and just say, all right, you know, today was a challenging day. This person, their energy was off. This person, their vibe was off. But yeah, you know what? Just to realign and get everything back on track, man. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, it's wild, man. It's wild. I mean, you know, you don't really realize how much stuff you're carrying around until you kind of stop carrying it around.
You know? Yeah, it's true. It's true, man. I agree with you, man. So, yeah, man. So, one more thing for you, Max, man. We drawing it down now, my brother.
Play it on me.
Yeah. So, you know, basically, I mean, you've done so much dope stuff, bro. And we just appreciate you taking out the time, man, for the podcast. So,
I'm honored that I got to come on, man.
Look, man, we honored to have you, brother. You know, and for people that don't know, my brother Max, he's going to be a part of the Sync seminar. So, you know, that's going to be January 8th, man. So y'all definitely need to attend, man. And we just going to have some dynamic panels talking about everything, music licensing, motivation, artists being able to find different ways to actually just do what they have to do to succeed. So, you know, we're happy to have him, man. And Max, if there's anything on the horizon, anything you got coming or anything that you want to talk about, you know, let the people know, man, like what's next for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff happening right now for me. You know, like I said, Chell and I got these new songs we've been working on forever that we're going to put out, you know, pretty soon. I just finished working on a musical. I can't say too much about it, but It's an audio musical, and I'm really excited about that coming out, hopefully soon. I got a couple films that I'm going to start work on soon. And something that I want to say to everybody listening is, something that I'm finding to be more important for me, is to go out and kind of get inspired by things. Go see movies, go read books, go look at art, go do things that are new to you, go have mm-hmm. new experiences, because that's, I find, to be the most inspiring stuff. And don't give up.
Dope, man. Dope. Yep. Gotta stay inspired, stay motivated, feed your mind, body, and soul, man. That's key, man. That's key. So, well, this was super dope, man. Like I said, man, we just appreciate you, bro. And yes, it's been super dope vibes, man. So, we're gonna keep building. And man, we appreciate you, my brother.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome. I had a great time.
Anytime, brother. So for all the listeners, once again, this was the Diagnosis Success Podcast, man. And we just appreciate y'all, man. And just always listening, always tuning in, man. Y'all stay motivated.
Winning so much that it seems wrong. Never gonna lose, that's my theme song. I'm just a kid, really changed, y'all. Back to reality, ain't no one bad as me. See, they be doubting, but I keep on